Okay, so in previous years on different rotations, I try not to do the same exact shiur every year because then it gets boring. You can like listen to the last year's one. We'll talk about, you know, like what are the proper products for Pesach and things like that. But one of the topics that sometimes gets, I wouldn't say overlooked, but I don't usually give it like as much focus is the actual question of how to kasher. And why we kosher certain ways for certain things and other ways for other things, and what the rationale is behind each of those things. So there are a lot, really, really, if we had time, we would do two different shiurim, and one would be all about the, you know, like rationale, and then a whole different shiur about the specifics, but we don't have time for that. So what we'll do is we'll go into some rationale that's good to know, and some of the machloksim actually that will actually bring to light why you sometimes see like the Star K will say this and the OU will say that and the CRC will say this and your rabbi then says, no, all that's fine, and right, like where all that comes from. So we're gonna, as much as we can, Eli, save the exciting seats for you. So we'll do a little bit at a time. I didn't make you marmakoma sheets because I'm not really going to take you to that many sources at all. But I guess the best marmakoma sheet is the Pesach guide that I sent out already. But it'll obviously be explaining a lot of that. Yeah, you'll get in that section. You'll get it. See, you always come ready. But you don't need sources per se. But we'll go through a few things at a time. So the first concept to know is that the idea of kashering in general, where does it come from? It comes from the source is when Am Yisrael defeat the Midianite army. So what happens at that moment? They get all the kalim from Midian, and so they say, well, what do we do now? What do we do now? We have all these things that are not kosher. They weren't kosher. They were used for non kosher food, etc. So they're given instructions first of all about tefilas kalim, right? How to take something that was owned by a non Jew and get it now owned by a Jew. There are more seats in here, and then second of all, how to get rid of the non kosher taste. Right, so the Torah there tells, Hashem tells Moshe, anything that was put in Eish should be put in Eish. Anything that was used with fire should be put in fire. Anything that was put with water should be put in water. And that comes out, what basically is the concept of what we call kibolo kach polto, which means the following. Boleya means swallowed in. Ever taste, this whole concept of kashering, where does it come from? It comes with the assumption that somehow, when I cook food, right, so I take a pot, and I make meatballs in that pot, right? And then I clean the pot afterwards. So you'd say, so we're done. So why can't I use that pot and use it to make macaroni and cheese? So the answer is there's some type of belia, there's something swallowed up, some taste that is remains in the walls of the pot. There's actually some science that supports some of this at least, that there's something absorbed in the pot that when I then go ahead and cook again, whatever was absorbed in that pot actually comes back into the food and makes that food, so if I was using it for meatballs and now the next morning I use it for macaroni and cheese, when I make the macaroni and cheese, that fleshic taste is going to come out. So same thing, if that's true, and that's true with a pot, it could be true with a frying pan, it could be true with in an oven, right? In an oven, we'll talk about as we move along, that there's steam that comes out, right, from the food in an oven, right? And then what happens? That steam rises to the top in the walls of the oven, and it absorbs the taste from the walls. And then same thing, when I go to cook something again in that oven, what happens? Some of that, when there's more steam again, the taste particles will come back out into whatever food that you're cooking. So that's like the idea of called blios, these things that are somehow absorbed, tastes that are absorbed in the kalim. So what does that mean? It means that in order to kasher, what is the goal of kashering? The goal of kashering is to destroy, in some way, get rid of those blios, that remnant of the taste of the item that's already now absorbed in the fork or the knife or the pot or the, you know, microwave or whatever it is that you're going to use. Fine. All year long, we're looking to do meat and milk. That's what we're concerned about, right? But on Pesach, I'm concerned of the blios of chametz, that there's some taste of chametz left in my microwave, my oven, my whatever things are. And how do I get rid of them? Fine. So number one rule is, okay, good. So how do I get rid of that taste? So you're like, by using a blowtorch. So we clearly don't always use a blowtorch, right? Hopefully, most of us don't ever use a blowtorch. I'm not gonna recommend. There's no word blowtorch in my thing anywhere because we don't do that. I'm not even gonna bother you to get a fire hot rock and somehow not hurt yourself with it. So we're not going to do that either. But
I know, very exciting.
And Van Milu Bennett. Yes, you don't have to worry about it. The stone, the fire hot stone that somehow you're supposed to not hurt yourself with. Yes, then don't worry. We're not going to do that either. But the idea, why there are different types of kashering, because it depends how the taste got into the kli, right? So, for example, if I was, having a barbecue on my grill, right, and I used some type of chametz sauce on my hamburgers, and I put that right on the grate of the grill. So, how did that grate get the taste of chametz in it? By direct contact, right? So anything that comes into direct contact is going to require what's called a libun chamor, which means that it has to get fired up so hot that it actually destroys the taste right there on the spot. That's called libun chamor. That's very difficult to reach, libun chamor, in a normal kitchen. The way we do it in the one example that we sometimes use is a self-cleaning oven. So self-cleaning oven will get to libun chamor. And the reason libun chamor is convenient is because since the process of kashering in that moment is actually destroying the taste on the spot, I don't have to worry about this thing we'll talk about in a minute about waiting 24 hours. Right? That doesn't have to happen when you do libun chamor.
Would a blowtorch work for a grill though?
So a grill is the amount of heat that's required to make a grill work, and also probably the harder part about the grill is actually cleaning it. And if anyone who has ever used a grill frequently, like I do, my grill is disgusting. I clean it every time I use it, but it's gross. And to actually clean a grill, it would take you hours. Like, I just tell people, just go to ShopRite and buy a charcoal thing for $30 and throw it away. Whatever. Like, it is the amount of time it's going to take you. There's no way it's worth your time to clean a grill. The amount of time it's going to clean it. The way you would do it is you would take charcoal briquettes and put it on both sides, fill up the bottom and on top of the thing, and fire it. And it would get that hot, and you'd also be dangerous to do it in your house. But you could do it. It would get that hot, and you would technically kosher your grates. But it's so hard to clean. It's probably not practically worth it. Fine. But the point is, that's just one example. So the rule is, it depends how the taste goes in. So kibolo, the way it goes in, kach poto, that's the way it pulls it. That's the way the taste comes out. So if you put the item right on the grill, the only way to get it out is by burning off the time on the grill itself. Right, but if you, for example, use a microwave, right? So how does the tom get into a microwave? Through steam, right? Anything that's made, I don't know anything about chemistry or physics, I don't know anything about this stuff. But somehow, microwaves make the molecules move around really fast, and it creates steam, right? And so therefore, what's the way we're going to kosher a microwave? We'll go through the details of it, is through steam. Right? Same thing with everything else we're going to talk about. How does a sink get anything in it? Through water splashing on it. Right? So how are we going to get rid of it? Through splashing hot water. Right? So kibolo kachpolta means that whenever we're dealing with the item itself, we have to figure out the way you're going to pull out that tom is going to be in the same process through which it typically gets, the way the taste goes in, that's the way it comes out. One of the questions that comes up is, does that rule, kibolo kachpoto, this rule of how the taste goes in and out the same way, is that always true? Is it always exactly that way? Or is there a more objective standard? Like, so for example, a lot of times people ask the question, can you kosher a warming drawer? So the answer in theory should be, yeah, why not? Kibolo kachpoto, the same way, however hot the warming drawer gets, right? A warming drawer that you're going to use for Shabbos, in usual case, is a different Shabbos conversation, should not be a warming drawer that gets to 500 degrees, right? Because then it's not really a warming drawer, that became an oven. Right, so a warming drawer gets to 250 or whatever, so it's not very hot, right? But it is certainly not libun chamor. But the question becomes, can I kosher a warming drawer just by putting it on the highest setting? So it's a big machlokas haposkim, and most poskim assume that to get to that this idea of kibolo kachpoto only works to a certain extent, but that for certain items we still need that higher level of heat to actually extract the taste. And therefore, just getting it to like that minimum temperature, which isn't all that hot, may not be enough. And that's the reason why if you ask the kosher organizations how to kosher a warming drawer, what do they tell you? Take a couple of sternos, light them, put them in your warming drawer, and close it. And you're like, I don't think that's so safe, right? And that's why I won't even put in writing how to kosher a warming drawer, because I'm not taking responsibility for that. I'm going to get sued for someone's house blowing up, Khalila. But that's because there's a machlokas whether, even if you want to say, what do you mean that's as hot as it gets? Yeah, but it still doesn't hit a certain minimum level of heat. So that's not gonna, some posts can say that's fine, but others say that's not. And so because of Pesach, and again, because you can find in some of this stuff also, some would argue that a warming drawer is more of a convenience than it is a necessity, as opposed to an oven per se. So that, so therefore, in that scenario, typically the approach is to be more machmer. Fine. So that's the concept of kibbolo kachbolo. Fine. So that's just one idea to know in the first place. Another conversation that comes up is the question of kashering plastic. Kashering plastic. If you look into all the different guides, you're going to get different answers. Or a lot of times they'll say, kashering X thing is fine for those who kasher plastic. It's like in like the ultra sitter, like some say, you know, for those who kasher plastic. You're like, I don't know, am I one of those? Like, am I, like I wear, you know, whatever. Like, how does that work? So where does that come from? So the basic question is about the Minchas Yisrael Dayan Weiss and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Dayan Weiss thought, what do you mean? If it's just as, there are certain items that can't be kashered. So for example, earthenware can't be kashered, right? Why can't earthenware be kashered? Because it's an assumption that it is so porous that it absorbs things so well that you can't get it out. And the only way to get it out, actually, would be to fire it so hot that, like as hot as you, like a kiln. But most people are nervous to fire it that hot. Why? They're afraid it's going to break. So Chazal said, because most people are too nervous to actually do it the right way, Chazal were smart. They knew exactly how we think. If you're going to make people kasher that hot, they're actually not going to do it right. And therefore, it's not going to work. So that's where earthenware doesn't get kasher. The question is plastic the same thing? So Dayan Weiss thought, no. He thought it's not necessarily more porous. And there's a lot of reasons to be makel. Rav Moshe was not as excited about it. Rav Moshe Feinstein thought that plastic should not be kasher. And he had it for a different reason, because plastic was not one of the items that existed. It's created by, you know, human beings. It didn't exist in the time when all these rules of kashrut were made. In times that get story about Midian, there was no thing like, and what do you do for plastic? Like, they didn't have plastic in the Midbar. And so Moshe writes, so therefore the rules of kashering, you could have said, don't apply, and it's fine. He says, don't apply, and therefore we can't do it. So what you're going to find, though, is that depending on the item, some things will say, actually, we will kashrut plastic. I'll give you an example where everybody kashrut, almost everybody kashrut plastic. A microwave. If you have a microwave that's plastic on the inside, no, almost nobody says you can't kasher your microwave. Why? Because how can you not have a microwave on Pesach, right? No, that's not. But yes and no. Yes and no. But what I mean is, I've never heard any poskim say it this way, but I think this is true. I was talking to one of my rabbi friends about this the other day. Like, clearly, we do allow kashering microwaves even if they're plastic, even though, you know, the kasher regulations allow it. But if you talk about, for example, we're talking maybe a little bit about dishwashers, very often that they'll say, if it's stainless steel, you can kosher it. If it's plastic, you can't. And even if it's stainless steel, if it's a plastic rack, you can't kosher it either, because you can't kosher plastic. What do you mean? You just told me you can kosher plastic, right?
When he says that microwaves, it goes into the food and not into the plastic.
So there's two points to it, yeah. Right. So number one, the microwave, no food is touching the walls of the microwave, that's A. And B, I think also because I would say dishwasher is seen as a luxury, not a need. So meaning, not that that makes the change of the halacha, but it changes the approach once you already have a machlokas. Right? Once a lot of poskim are against it. So then, for something that's a luxury, okay, so then we'll be machmir. For things that are more necessity, there's more reason to be makel. So those are two just like general things that come up in these conversations. Fine. But let's just talk about the different types of kashering that exist, and then we'll go through, literally we're going to go item by item. And talk about how they work. So we talked about liban gamor. Liban gamor means, or liban chamor, which is to literally burn out the taste. We're talking about getting to like 900 degrees. Okay, so for most people in their kitchen, it's not safe to do. You shouldn't be doing it. The one place it'll work is in your self-clean oven. Even that, you have to decide if you want to do that or not. The advantage of liban gamor is, liban chamor is, it burns everything out immediately. You don't have to wait 24 hours. You don't have to do any preparation for liban. You just set it and it goes. So they still talk about it's a good idea to clean the door of your oven, but you don't have to wait 24 hours. You don't have to do anything. Anything you put inside your self-clean oven also is fine. So the racks that are inside, some people like to take the grates from their stovetop and put in there if they want to. Again, sometimes the enamel comes off, so be careful. But some people like to do that. Great, fine. Sorry, no pun intended. Great. It's fine. You can do that, and it's totally fine. Good. Okay. There's something else, though, called Liban Kal. Liban Kal is a lower level. It's a similar to Liban Chamor, but it only gets to like 500 or 550 degrees. So that's what we're going to talk about regular ovens, right? Non-self-clean ovens. We'll talk about how that has value. It's not quite as strong as Liban Chamor, and that's why it requires still waiting 24 hours, but it's a little less intense. The next level is what we call Hagala. Hagala is something I think we're probably a lot familiar with. That involves taking a big pot of boiling water, or pot of water, and boiling the water and dropping things in there or pouring the water on. That's Iwur in a second. This always needs 24 hours. What is the 24 hours all about? Okay, so let's clarify the 24 hours. Okay, there's another rule about the little pieces, this little taste that's inside the kelim. Right, what's the rule about the taste that's inside your kli? The rule is that meat taste from the meatballs or your chametz taste from your macaroni, whatever, that's inside the wall of your pot, it only has a 24-hour shelf life. Okay? After 24 hours, we assume that time becomes pugum. It becomes no longer potent. It only stays for 24 hours. After that, as far as taste is concerned, it's basically gone. It has no. It's either gone or it's so gross that it wouldn't impart its taste on anything else. So what that means is that on like a Torah level, midaraisa, at that point, anything you would cook in that pot. Let's say you made meatballs in a pot, and then 2 days later, you're assuming it's clean. And then 2 days later, you're going to make macaroni and cheese. You're totally fine, right? In fact, b'di'evit, if it happens, this happens all the time when people call and say, we made a mistake, right? So for my first question is, I hope it didn't throw out the food. Why? Because b'di'evit, after it was done already, as long as the pot wasn't used for 24 hours, if you made meatballs in a macaroni and cheese pot, again, if it was clean and didn't use it for 24 hours, then you should kosher it afterwards. We'll kosher it to be machmir. But really, the taste inside the pot doesn't impact the food. And it's actually fine. And so it's always good to never throw the food. Like, people always thought, I threw out the food already. Now what do I do with my pot? I said, don't throw out the food. The food is actually fine. Right? Because once it's done, it's okay. So because of that, because waiting 24 hours allows the taste to become negligible at that point and not really bother us that much. And then we're only dealing now with derabanans anyways. We're not dealing with a Torah level problem. So therefore, Chazal always said, whenever you kasher, except for Liban Chamor, when you're just destroying the taste, whenever you kasher, always wait 24 hours beforehand. Why? Because then you're worrying very little about the actual taste that's in the kelim. And that's the reason why we're so careful to wait 24 hours. And that's why at the top of the sheet, the Kashim for Pesach guidelines, well, that's a different point. Sorry. It's a different reason. There's two other points. So that's one point, okay? So that's number one. The other point is, when it comes to Pesach, there's an added chumrah, okay? And the added chumrah is that on Pesach, and what also happens, so now we're talking about, so that's A, is the issue of the taste. Good. But now let's talk about Hagala first, and then we'll get to that next point in a second. So what's Hagala? Hagala is, you take that pot of water, the pot hasn't been used for 24 hours. The minhag is to use a Pesach pot, but it technically doesn't have to be. Any pot that hasn't been used for 24 hours is game. And you boil up the water in that pot until it gets to a rolling boil. Right? I had never seen a rolling boil in my life until I started kashering my house for Pesach. I didn't know what it looked like. And then I was like, oh, that's cool. I didn't know it did that. Right? Because you make pasta, it doesn't get to a rolling boil necessarily. Like it doesn't have necessarily, right? No. I mean, eventually it does, right? Right, what is that?
You don't want it to get to a
rolling boil. Right, exactly, right. So I never saw that before. So then now I learned what it looks like.
So it really is a rolling boil?
It looks like it really, yeah, it really gets going. It gets going, like you can really see it, okay? So let's say you want to kasher forks and spoons, let's say, for Pesach, right? So what would you do? Your Kiddush cup or whatever, right? So you wouldn't use that item for 24 hours. You clean it, you don't use it for 24 hours, and then you place it in that pot, one at a time, you place it in. The nice thing about Hagala is it doesn't have to be done all at once. Meaning, as opposed to Tefillah's Kelim, when you're toveling, you have to drop the whole thing in the water, right? Here, you don't have to. So you could use like tongs or something, put half in, and then the other half in, as long as it covers the whole thing eventually. Or you can just drop it in, that's fine too. But I'm just saying, that's how you do Hagala. What's part of the advantage of Hagala? What happens is that you have this big pot, and whatever taste is in that cup or whatever, comes out into the water and becomes batal, right? It becomes nullified in the water, okay? And that's, you do it over and over and over and over again, and that's totally fine, and it works, and that nullifies the taste, whatever taste is in the utensil, fine. It also works for the pot itself, right? You cook the pot up like that, and then some have the minhag that they they get it to a rolling boil, and then they drop a rock in, so it makes a big mess, and it goes over the sides. That's just it's because you want to make sure the water covers the lip also. The other way to do that, my regular Simon has a much easier method. He just says, get it to a rolling boil, and then cap it. Why? Because once you cap it, you're going to catch the steam around the top, and then you're not throwing rocks in your kitchen, which for some people is more pleasant. So you can do that also. That also, and it also catches the top also when you do that. So that's Kahagala. Okay. But let's get to, yeah.
Cool question. So yes. If you were doing bunch of utensils, it has to be one at a time, but could you put it in, let it drop to the bottom, and then keep dropping?
You can. You just don't want to put too many in. But yeah, you could do a few and then take them out. Yeah, it's good to have time. But each time it has to hit a rolling boil again.
Right, you have to keep the
it
water.
It has to be right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So you have to keep changing the water?
No, you have to keep changing the water. You just have to get the water back up to the rolling boil.
You put
too, if you put too many in, it'll stop boiling. So you do a few and then pull that. It's good to have tongs. It's a helpful thing when you're doing this.
Also, let's say you want to do a utensil that's metal, but it has a plastic handle.
Yeah.
Or something.
So you try not to do things that have other types of handles or things that are dirty in any way at the handle. Mm-hmm. Knives before they do Haggadah, you have to do what's called ni'itza, which means you take steel wool and you rub it 10 times with the steel wool just to make sure there's nothing left in the serrations of the knife. It's not serrated; you don't have to do that. Serrated knives, you should do that. Before you put
Haggadah. That's the concept of the knife garden.
That's why you thought that your mom buried things. That someone had this thing that became treif. Stick it in the ground. It's not true. It was stabbing it in the ground 10 times and only for knives.
Right.
There's no such thing for a fork or a spoon.
10?
Just to do it a lot of times. It's probably something in Shemayim about the number 10, but that's why. Yes, that's where the knife garden comes from. But that somehow became turned into a thing. It's really just to stick it in 10 times just as a way of cleaning it out.
An easy way.
But back to the handle, because that's the real problem.
Yeah.
Use a sieve or a basket with holes in it. You can put them in and just...
If you have a big enough pot and a big enough and small enough basket, then yes.
Take it all out at once.
Yes, yes. You could do a few of them. You wouldn't want to pile them on top of each other, but a few. In industrial kitchens, they do them with these humongous pots and whatever. Yeah. But in terms of the handles, the minhag is to try not to do ones that have separate handles from the blade, because then there's a little stuff that gets stuck in there and things like that. This general rule in kashering in general is that items that are dirty and you can't get clean should not be kashered. And that's why you're going to see a lot of these things we don't kasher, because they're just a Cuisinart blender thing. Mm-hmm. You just shouldn't kasher because you just can't. It's just too dirty. It's too hard to do. So there's certain things like that. Even if you could technically do the kashering process, but because you can't clean them, it's not really gonna work. So one of the things, because Haggadah though, and this is where we get to some of the theory, because Haggadah really involves actual nullification of taste in the water, okay? So that's great, and it works out fine until 11:53 a.m. on Erev Pesach. Okay, that's not really, this year it's 11:53 a.m., right? The end of the fifth hour, Erev Pesach. Why? Because until that moment, you're allowed to own. You can own chametz. After that moment, not only can you not own chametz, there's an extra chumra, which is that even though usually if some milk falls in my meat, it can be nullified, 1 in 60, right? One drop of milk falls into meat, so it's fine. So I've had plenty of it. It becomes batel, it becomes nullified. Chametz, once that moment comes, becomes what's called aser b'mashehu. There is no amount of non-chametz stuff that can nullify the taste. So therefore, Haggadah no longer works. Okay, so for example, people ask the question, if I'm going to, we're going to talk about some of these more details as we move along, I'm going to a vacation place, I'm going to get an Airbnb for Chol HaMoed. Can I kasher the kitchen when I get there? The answer is yes and no. Yes, you can kasher the oven with self-clean. That you can do because you're just destroying the taste. But you cannot kasher the sink. And you cannot kasher, some things you won't be able to do because that is done through Haggadah, right? Or Eroi, which is through Bittul. So that's not going to work anymore. So we'll talk about the specific ones you can and can't do. But that's one of these questions that comes up. Or for example, the microwave. Microwave, you're going to use water, right? Boiling water. Again, that's Haggadah. And therefore, that's not going to work once Pesach starts. So I always get, almost every year, someone will call me 12:30 on Erev Pesach. I didn't do my microwave. I forgot. A couple times. Sorry, it's too late. Sorry, it's too late. Yeah. So sorry. Yeah, it's not so good. So sorry, it's too late. So that'll happen. So that's why I started, after I got a few calls like that, putting this disclaimer as big as I possibly could on the top of that sheet. Please make sure to get everything done, and not just get it done by 11:53. But if you need 24 hours, start your 24 hours to be done before that time, right? So that you have time to have your 24 hours and to kosher. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
I'm going to get some more. Maybe I missed this. No. Does the pot have to be a Pesach pot?
It is the minhag to use a Pesach pot for Pesach koshering.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be, but that's the that is the minhag to do that, because really any pot that hasn't but it's any pot that hasn't used 24 hours.
And like
kosher Pesach pot is
like
ideal.
When you pour the water in the boiling water in the sink.
Oh, we're gonna get there in a second. Okay, we didn't do it yet. Sorry. Good. Okay. So the next type. So one's Haggala. Yeah.
For Haggala, if you drop utensils, can you just leave the utensils in that pot?
You can leave them in for a little while and then take them out. Then you're supposed to cut. You're supposed to rinse them in cold water. That's like the finishing of the Haggala, is to rinse them cold. But you shouldn't have, like, you have to use your judgment, but it shouldn't be so many piling up in there. But you could do a few and then take them out, because also too many in there, it's going to stop. It won't get to the rolling boil.
Does the stove have to be koshered for Pesach before you're using the kosher pot, like the kosher for Pesach pot, in order to do it?
So usually what's going to end up happening is, the answer is it's a good idea. What I usually do is, the first thing I do is I kosher my grates, which we'll talk about in a second, and then right after I kosher my grates, then I start the koshering of everything else.
Okay.
I do that. I make that the first thing that I do, and then I have my Pesach pots ready, and then I do it. I go in that order, that way I'm safe. So let's talk about a couple other things, though, because this is sinks and counters and whatever. So there's another way that things become common sick, is through what's called iroi. So for example, your sink, right? How does anything in your sink become common sick or become melchik or phleishik? Because there's boiling hot water pouring down on the items in the sink. That's what's called iroi. So how are you going to get the taste out? Same thing through what we call iroi. Same example. Fine. Okay. So those are the basically the four different ways that you're going to do koshering. There's going to be Liban Chamor, heat to 900 degrees, Liban Kal, which is heat to like 500, 550, Haggala, which is the boiling water, and Iroi, which is pouring boiling water. But let's talk about, and let's just go just quickly, just so we have an understanding of what items can and cannot be kosher. Okay, so metal items can be koshered, stone things can be can be koshered. We know composite. Everyone knows about quartz and quartzite and all those things. I have a list of all of them in my thing. I warn people, though, granite, apparently, and I'm not an expert in this, but I got a little more of an expert. Granite, I think, handles the hot water better. Quartz, not so much, they say. At least they warn you when you buy it that it's not entirely heat resistant or whatever you call it. So it can crack, whatever. So that's not halakhic advice. That's just, good. Whatever.
Housekeeping.
You spent a lot of money on it. You may not want to pour boiling water on it. So quartz. So technically, you can kosher quartz. I don't know if you should kosher quartz. Is what I'm saying. You can. I'm covering it with oak tag and stuff. I'm not pouring hot water on my thing. I'm not going to do that. The stuff I buy in Passaic. It's like it's the same stuff. It's the same. It's the same plastic that they use for the lawn signs.
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah. That's what I got. Yeah.
I'm gonna cover my thing and like bring my hazard back.
Yeah.
But last week's Jewish Link.
Yeah. What?
It's like what you're talking.
It's very good.
It's like the fake granite looking.
Oh, it's not that. Oh, mine's not that fancy. Mine is like it's like this. It's like corrugated plastic, whatever you call it, right? It's like this corrugated. Yeah, is that right? And I use, but mine's white and I use blue tape, so it's very Zionistic. It looks like the state of Israel when you get there. Okay, so you cannot kosher ceramic or enamel, like those types of things you can't kosher. We don't, Ashkenazim don't kosher glass either, typically. Okay, we're going to talk about glass top.
Why do we have to kosher the countertops?
So we'll get to that also. Good. Well, I'll just say now. The reason why we kosher countertops is because of the concern that at some point while you're using the countertop, you splat, meatballs, fell on the counter. So like, again, it sure hasn't happened within 24 hours, right? So we're not talking about a very serious level of concern. We're talking about Chumra Pesach, that we kosher them because we want to make sure, just in case, if you had something hot on that countertop, but now something hot's going to go on there, splash in there again, and you're going to eat off the counter, whatever. So you could find yourself in trouble.
Inadvertently put a very, very hot pot down also.
You could have, but the chances of the transfer from your pot to the counter without, usually the pot to the counter doesn't transfer without liquid. So it's not, it's definitely a chumrah. But it's a chumrah for Pesach that we keep. Okay. So let's talk about some of the different items, okay? So let's talk about ovens. So ovens, we said before, the easiest thing to do, but not always the safest. The easy thing to do is a self-clean oven. It's easy. You just turn it on and you're finished. You can do it the lowest, minimum amount of time that the thing will allow, really? You can, yes.
I know it has to be for the longest amount that you've ever used it.
No. Okay? So it gets it. It's going to get, even if it goes for 2.5 hours, it gets to 900 degrees. All you have to do is hit 900 degrees, whatever it is, 850, 900 degrees. It's going to hit it. So 2.5 hours or 3 hours is fine. It doesn't have to be for 5 hours. As long as it hits the thing, you're good. Okay? And whatever is inside there, great. So you want to leave your grates in. You're fine. If you'd like, when you do that, let's just do that. Fine. That's A. Okay? What about an oven that either doesn't hit self-clean or you have experience, like say for example, like me, my oven from self-cleaning the lock thing, it melted. And so I couldn't, what?
A lot of ovens. After our oven broke, did we realize online everybody complains?
Yeah, I don't know why they have it if you're not supposed to, but that's whatever. So if it's already broken before, like mine did, or your nervous is going to break, so there's another way to do this. The other way to do it is what's called Lieben Kal. Okay, Lieben Kal, we just talked about, is it's getting, you're going to put the oven on an hour on the highest setting, 550, whatever. Okay, but in order to do that, Lieben Kal does not do the same thing that Lieben Chomer does, right? And therefore, it has all the things you have to do with Hagala, you have to do with Lieben Kal also. So you have to, first of all, clean it very well before, right? You have to...
Not use it for 24 hours.
You know, you clean it well, you don't use it for 24 hours, and then you put it on the highest setting. And then even once it's done, your racks are not... It's not the same status. You still have to cover your racks with tin foil. They say to stick holes in them so that the air can circulate. Like a big potato, so the air can circulate. Fine. Why do we allow that? So there's a bunch of reasons we allow it. And these are the basic reasons that we've explained before. So first of all, there's one other kula. We always think of chametz as so much more chamor. There's one piece of part about chametz that's actually more lenient, which is that chametz is what's called hetera bala. When the taste of chametz went into the kelim, it was permissible to eat, as opposed to, let's say, basr b'chalav or non-kosher. So there's some leniencies that apply to something. It's also machlokas. But again, there's some achron who think that because chametz was, when it, the taste went in, it was permissible, some reasons to be more lenient. Number two, the Rama writes that you know, me'ikra din for Pesach, items that, you know, that require, let's say, hagala, for example, but we're machmir to do libun, so libun kal is enough. Also, Ravon Cutler writes that he thinks that our ovens are different than the ovens in the times of Chazal. Times of Chazal, ovens, they would actually stick things on the wall of the oven. Mm-hmm. That's how you would bake. You would put things on the wall of the oven. Today, the food never touches the wall of the oven. Right? Ever. I hope. Right? So it's another reason to be more lenient, because you're not talking about items that are, it's not like the grill where the item goes directly on the floor of the oven or anything like that. And number four, remember we talked about the idea of kibolo kachpoto, if it applies to the way the taste goes in, the way it comes out, does that apply to the max the thing itself can reach, or is there a certain objective temperature? So we usually assume it's some objective temperature, but putting all these pieces together, there's that also, that kibolo kachpoto. The bottom line is that's the hottest your oven ever gets. Right? So there's another reason to be lenient. So that's why if a person isn't able to do a self-clean, doing a libun kal like this is certainly an appropriate, fine thing to do. Fine. So either you're going to do self-clean, or you'll do what we call this case of Lieben Kal. Fine. Okay, what about, and if you're doing self-clean, you don't have to cover your racks in your oven at all, because you did self-clean, you got it 900 degrees, it's fine to go. Fine. What about cooktops? Okay, cooktops. So different types of cooktops, obviously. The gas range, right? Your concern is your grates on top, right? So there's not really such a concern with the grates on top, to be honest with you. You might be surprised to hear. Rav Moshe Feinstein is a Jew, he writes that really, you shouldn't be worried about them at all. Why? Because the moment anything hits the grate, what happens? It gets burned off by the intense heat that's right there. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about a case of these tripods they used to have, which would hold, you know, which would hold the pots on. They wouldn't get quite as hot. And there, the Rama says you should be machmir to do liban on them. So Moshe writes we should do it. We should be machmir. We should do liban on them. How do you do liban chamor really on them? How do you do that? You turn it to the highest temperature. And the good thing to do is to put either a pot or a blech. You can even use a non-kosher Pesach blech if you want, right on top of it. You can see the fire spreads around on the thing. You leave it there for about 15 minutes. It gets it white. It gets it really hot. Be very careful. It gets very hot. And then it's kosher, Okay.
And don't do all four at once, so it will break the oven.
Yes, don't do all four at once. I wrote that in here also. Yes. Don't do one at a time. Yes.
I vaguely remember my father putting like aluminum foil or something on the grate. Is that the same thing?
To get it to spread.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, so a blech or a pot or something on top of there helps the fryer spread better.
Okay. And,
yeah.
But instead, I could just put in the self-cleaning oven.
You could just put in the self-cleaning oven and you're fine. Good to go.
You know the circle thing on...
Yes, you don't have to worry about that. That doesn't touch the food.
Okay.
Okay, so there's another piece. So that's how you kasher them. You kasher them one at a time by turning the fire underneath as high as it goes.
So you, okay. Do you have to clean it first or no?
You should clean it just because there's nothing on it, but you don't
need to wait.
You don't have to wait for 20 minutes. Yeah.
The flame is not hitting the entire grate.
Yeah, I mean, you should do your best to get it to hit as much as they can. Should do your best to get it to spread as much as possible to get it. Yeah. One thing. So what people do afterwards? So they take tin foil and they cover all the other parts, right? So I'm gonna tell you a conversation I had with the OU a few years ago. I told some people about this. I was very frustrated about my oven, my stovetop, because my stovetop looks like this. Probably looks how yours looks. I have a visual. Sorry for listening on the thing. But I do have a visual. My stovetop looks like this, okay? And probably yours does also, right? All of the grates interconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. There's nothing, there's no way any pot or anything will touch under any other part of my oven, my stovetop, because the grates cover the whole thing, okay? Yeah,
but food falls in, though.
Food falls in, fine. So I called the OU and I said, do I have to put tin foil underneath the grates? Like the OU says?
Like on the surface.
Like under the grate on the surface, like in between the things? And they said, no. I said, right, because nothing's going to touch it. I said, if something falls there, it's strafe. If something falls there, you cannot eat it. But I don't have to cover it. It's physically impossible for any pot or anything to be placed on that thing. And they said, yeah, you're fine. So it's good. It's a nice thing to know, just in terms of like, it looks nicer. I also like all this stuff.
Seems radical to me.
I know, I'm a radical person. I'm a radical rabbi. So I just say, but I called them because I thought it makes a lot of sense. It can't touch it. Nothing can touch it. And they said, I know I said something earth shattering. And they said, I'm just saying, the Orthodox Union, they told me, totally fine. Totally fine. Again, if you have space
don't tell my wife.
I won't tell your wife. If you can't handle this in your house, then don't do it. But I can handle it in my house, so I do that. You still have to cover the area around it. You know, you can cover up the space around it.
Right.
But anything underneath
that hole. What are you still covering the area around?
You know, there's like the around the outside.
The edge is around.
The edge around. I'll show you afterwards.
But okay.
The edge around. But I'm just saying, anything that is literally physically impossible for any cleat you have to touch doesn't have to be covered.
Yeah. But it's also hard to cover just the edge.
Okay, do whatever you like. You can do whatever you want. You can cover the whole thing. I'm just giving you my big Pesach kula of the year. You can say thank you. Okay, fine. I want to keep going. We're running out of time.
It's all attachments. Like if you separate three separate that pick up.
It doesn't matter. It's all covered.
It's covered.
It's all covered. Then you're fine. Okay. Next. I want to keep going, though, because we're running out of time. Glass. People have this question. Sometimes you have a glass. This happens more often for me when I go on vacation. And there's like, it's in every hotel, it's now glass. Yes, now glass covered. Oh, so, sorry. Before glass... what about just regular electric stovetop? You turn it on till it turns orange red. It's glowing. That is libun chamor. That's it. You're done. Just turn it on until it glows, and then it's kosher because it's that hot. It gets super hot.
What about the issues in between the burners?
In between the burners, you'll cover them up. Those you'll cover up. So what about a glass top?
The,
yes.
The electric one, right? But not the
glass
induction.
Right, so induction ones, those are the glass cup, one have glass on top, right?
Yeah.
So the ones that have glass on top, so same thing, each one of those, when you turn it on, it turns orange, you know, bright red. That's, as soon as it turns that, gets to that heat, that part is koshered.
No, but okay? I don't think induction don't even think gets hot.
Yeah.
Doesn't get hot at all?
No.
Oh, sure.
It has a cook.
It just sciences
it
hot.
It has to be an induction pan.
It has to be an induction pan, and it's sort of like a microwave kind of technology. It doesn't get...
It's real.
I don't know how that works. Okay, this is yours. We'll have to talk about it afterwards.
It's like smart kitchen.
Use your gas range. I don't know how to do that.
I don't think that's
Never heard of it. Is it the type that it only cooks once you place it on it?
Correct.
Yes. Oh, someone sent me that, Shiloh. Okay, I didn't get the answer yet. Someone sent me a Shiloh from Iceland with a range like that, and I didn't know the answer. I had to find out. It only turns on once something's on top of it.
Which has to be the right material also.
But once it's on, does it get that hot?
But then the pot will get kosher probably in the process.
It just, I don't know the science behind it.
Okay. Let's go on. I just want to make sure we finish. So that, we'll have to figure out the induction one. It could be it's okay also. It could be a way to do it. But glass, the ones that are glass, same thing. You turn it on, it gets red hot. It's kosher. The only problem with the glass is that the in-between areas don't get hot, which is good, but they can't really be koshered either. So you just have to like sort of, and I think you're not supposed to cover them with stuff. I think you're not supposed to. They could crack.
Safety-wise, you're not supposed to.
They could crack, I think. Yeah. So I think you just have to be careful. You clean it very well, and then on Pesach, you shouldn't put anything down on the other parts that are not, you know, not the parts that are kashered. Fine. Microwaves, okay? Kabola kachpoto. How does it get? Steam in, steam out. Take a bowl. I usually just use a paper bowl. It makes it easier. You take a bowl of water, and you fill it up, and you put, sorry. First, you clean the microwave. You don't use it for 24 hours. And then you take a bowl and you put it in the oven and you let it go for 20 minutes until it fills with steam. Bowl of water, thank you. And you fill up with water and you it steams it out like crazy. Then it's kosher. You should not use, though, the same turntable thing that's in there. You should take it out or cover it. They say you can cover it up with lots of saran wrap.
Not aluminum foil.
Cover with saran wrap. And then you could use that on Pesach also. Good. Instant pots. I would not kosher for Pesach because there's two complicated instant pots. Don't kosher them. They're too complicated to clean.
Never goes in it is water. Like, in other words,
if it's mamish clean, the whole thing, it's like never gets, because most instant pots, a lot of them get like very dirty and whatever, but it's mamish totally.
We just use it just to boil water.
If it's just used for boiling water, it should be able to kosher. But if it's anything that's used with stuff, because there's so many elements, you can't really clean it. Refrigerators, have a good time. Just clean them. Just clean them very well.
So you don't have to cover.
You don't have to cover it. No, you don't have to cover it. No. You can if you like. If your mom will be angry at you, then do it. Fine. Okay. You're allowed to cover if you want to. Let's talk about sinks. Okay, if your sink is made of china, then you can't kosher it. The porcelain, those things can't be kosher. You have to get like either a sink insert or something to, a bucket to put in there and just do everything in the bucket. If it is made out of stainless steel, so then you can kosher it. All the same rules. Okay, this is Eroy. So what are you going to do? You are going to clean it well, nazi, use it for 24 hours. Okay? That's hard sometimes to do.
Not using anything hot, right? I mean, you can use cold water. Right?
Yeah, but you should really try not to. As much as possible, try not to use it at all. Yeah, I try to put tape across and not use it. As much as possible, not to use it. If you ended up some cold water, it's okay. But it's better just not to use it for 24 hours. Then you do the following. People have different ways of doing this. Some people like to use a kettle. Maybe some people like it easier. But the key is like this. You have to get poured hot water on every spot in the sink. Okay? But that water can't be like poured on one spot and then like dribble its way to the next spot. Okay? So what I do, it's probably not as safe. I use these little hand pots, these little pots. I boil them up with, I have like a few of them going at the same time, and I actually take them and I just like splash them on the different quadrants of the sink. And it's really safe. And you dump it in the middle. It's like very easy. I use like 10 towels. No, it's fine. Usually it works out fine. But other people have told me what they like to do instead is they have a Pesach kettle and they get it boiling hot and then they just pour it in this place. It takes longer. It's more control, but it takes more time. So two kettles. Okay, three kettles, whatever. Yeah, so it just takes more time. So, but that's fine. But the key is this. It shouldn't be that you pour it in one spot and it just kind of like dribbles onto all the way over. Like that's not, it has to hit the spot. You want it to be, it needs to be poured in each spot. So that can take a little while to get it done. You know what I'm saying?
So that, like if you pour on the side and it just goes down, it's not good enough.
Not, right in the spot, it's fine. But if it's like going all the way, you know, the walls and then the bottom, that's already too much.
The wall and like one pour?
Yes. The wall and one pour and then the bottom one pour, that's fine. But like, you should just pour hot water on the faucets, pour hot water on, have a hot water party. on all the parts of your sink. And you're fine. And also, by the way, you can also kasha if you have those insert, you know, trays, whatever those things.
The racks?
You can just pour hot water on them. That's right. If they're metal.
Sometimes they're plastic coated.
If they have little teeny tiny plastic things in the bottom, you're fine. But I'm saying if they're metal, you can. If they're totally plastic, they're coated.
Coated with plastic. Most of them are coated
with plastic.
Coated
with plastic?
Yeah. Those are no good.
So, you can replace them out better, but whatever. I mine are totally metal. You can dive in Mara without me. It's fine. Someone wants to go to Mara, you can go. You don't have to wait for me. Okay, so let's do countertops. Okay, countertops, you can just splash water on them. Granite, if they're granite or all the different things I listed in the thing are all fine to do. Some even allow formica that way, even though it's plastic.
You have to not use them for 24 hours.
You shouldn't use it for 24 hours, but anything hot.
Anything hot.
Yeah, if you can put down your phone on the counter, that's fine. But you shouldn't put anything hot on there. I know these things sound obvious, not obvious. So you can, and then what do? Then you either splash hot water on them or you do the same thing you do with the sink, you do with the counter. So this is the thing with the steamers. The steamers are not so simple. Okay, steamers, to use a steamer, it has to be an industrial grade steamer and you have to go over each spot two times. Yeah. It could take you you might just want to buy the corrugated plastic by that point. So like, you know what I mean? Like if you want to, it's fine, but you have to use. So I wrote this, the Wagner Power Steamer 905 can be used for this purpose because it's the only one I knew about. Rabbi Neuberger quoted this one. I just found out there's another one called the Wagner Spraytech 915E. I don't know how much these things cost, but you could do it, but it has to hit like 400, 500 degrees to be done well. So if you want to do that, it's fine. If you have, you know, granite or quartz or quartzite, that's fine. You can do that. That's okay. Okay, hot water urns. So the general rule is, if it's used for water only, you're fine. You use it for Pesach also. Like, you just use it for water, you can just clean it and use it for Pesach. It's totally fine. What if you've used vinegar to descale it? What do? So the Star K, or the CRC, has a whole method for how you can kasha your urn if you want to. Okay, what they say to do is, you decide if you want to do this or not. Okay, they say to take the urn, boil it up. Okay, don't use it for 24 hours. Then boil it up, and then once it's hot, really hot water is really hot, then you take off the top. You take another boiling hot water, and you pour it in until it overflows.
It sounds like a broken urn.
So
I don't know if you want to do that or not, but they said that works because again, then you're going to
use it with vinegar.
If you clean it with vinegar, so that's the way to kosher it. If you want, or just get a different
one from
Pesach.
Yeah.
And then you also have to kosher the top with Haggadah.
So. Is it the same if you clean it with sour salt? Do you know?
I don't know what sour salt is.
Sour salt is kosher for Pesach.
Some of them are kosher for Pesach. Yeah.
I don't know if it is either.
Okay, so if the sour salt wasn't kosher for Pesach,
it'd be the same story. Yeah. Same thing.
The other thing is, how about if you use kosher for Pesach vinegar, you know, to clean it?
Then you're fine.
Yeah. Oh.
No, I'm saying not during the year, but
kosher Pesach for all year.
Oh.
After you boil up the water, you put in vinegar that's from kosher Pesach.
You can, but that's not going to make it. That's not going to kosher it any better, right, per se. But it's an interesting idea. People ask about sous vides. I'll say the same thing I say about other things. If it's too much stuff there, complicated, whatever, then generally you don't kosher them for Pesach. If yours is super clean, it's barely been used just for very, very clean things.
The sous vide never touches
anything
except water.
So if your sous vide has never touched anything ever, so I wrote cannot be kosher for Pesach, because that's what all the kosher agencies say. Because they're nervous about, you know, the mechanism, whatever. But if your mamish never touches anything, so then you know better than them, and your thing is totally fine. So I'm fine with that. This is a big one, hot plates. Okay, hot plates. So Simon's always told me that hot plates, he feels you can clean them off and turn it on for an hour, and then cover it. So that way if there's any residue.
How is that different than the warming door then?
Okay, so it's different. Because, why is it different? It's different because, number one, you don't have chametz ever enclosed in it. It's pots that are sitting on top of it, right? Pot to the thing. Yeah, stuff. So you clean that stuff off,
right?
And then you run it. So again, the Kabbalah Kachpolto, and again, without it, you're not going to have anything to heat your food on Pesach. You're not using your warming shore, and you're not using your hot plate, then you're going to have nothing. So he felt that you can rely on the Kabbalah Kachpolto by the hot plates, and also cover it. Also cover with with tin foil. Have the tin foil.
How long do you run it?
You should wait 24 hours. Yeah, should wait. Clean it. Wait 24 hours. Run it. Put it on the highest for an hour, and then cover it with foil. Dishwashers, again, if it's stainless steel, you can kosher the baby kosher regular dishwashers in general, just to run, clean it out. But it's really hard to clean. You have to clean out the trap on the bottom, which is very common. It's not so simple.
What is this dishwasher?
Yeah, the bottom of the dishwasher. It's really disgusting. It's hard to do well. So that's why I tell people like forgo it for Pesach. But you can, in theory, if you can clean it well, and then you run it on the highest setting for one time. So again, you clean it, don't use 24 hours, run on the highest setting with just water, and that would again. So the other thing is that if the racks are plastic, again, the postum typically are machmir when it comes to the racks, because again, it's not this big need per se to kosher plastic for that. So, if you do that, then great. Someone told me they have extra racks and they use their extra racks for Pesach. So great, so then you're fine. We talked about warming drawers, don't do it. Water coolers, you could typically just splash hot water on the
spout
of the hot thing, yeah. That's fine. As long as it hasn't come, if it's just cold water, yeah, you're totally fine. And then what? Keurigs, you can kosher. Keurigs, you can kosher. I don't even have one here. The OU has a way to do it. I think I'm gonna tell you the right thing right now. That basically what you do is the following. First of all, check the we became very careful.
We use only kosher
for Pesach Keurig cups all year on purpose. Oh. And that way, you don't have to kosher for Pesach because the only the year, every because there's like 300 flavors of Keurig cup yolks that are kosher for Pesach.
So
but it's not too late. Now you know for this year, okay? You can check out the list of the kosher for Pesach ones, and that's A. If you do that, then you just wipe it down. You don't have to do anything. If you've been using it for different flavors, so same thing. You don't use it. You clean it. You don't use it for 24 hours, and then you run it through. A regular cycle, and it'll. I think you see. You're also there's a cup thing. Yeah, you have to do halgalah. The thing that pops out. The little thing that has the pin. That thing you can pull out and you can drop it in. I kosher that thing when I get rid of the kosher in my sink. I drop it in the pot. Just to juggle on that. It is plastic. See, I told you it's a little bit complicated with the plastic.
So if it's plastic, you can't then.
It's okay. The OU says it's okay. Here's my rule.
The necessities you're allowed, just like a microwave.
Keurig is like in Sakanas Nefashos. If you have your Keurig,
and the dishwasher also. Sometimes.
I know. I don't have to tell you. I wish I could explain all these things. I can't explain all of them. I tried to explain as many as I can. So that thing that pops out, that little thing with the pin. Where you put the pod. It does. It does. It pops out. It pops out, you do a haggal on that, and then the rest of it you then put it back in, and then you run a regular cycle through it.
I would think to clean it well.
If you look in the OU guide, it tells you the step by step exactly what to do. I'll tell you exactly. That was a very big finish. Okay, so that is a big finish. I hope I didn't scare you with my. The aluminum foil companies are going to be angry at me for my kula about the underneath the grates thing. But obviously, if you have more questions, I'm here and around. You got it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll stay. Okay. I'm happy to stay.